speaking to your question, generally I think if I had a little better sense of what your understanding is already.
Okay.
I mean, there's no point in my going over history with which you're already familiar.
In a way, there is.
Because it confirms. Yes, I see.
I joined the state system in 62.
In Albany?
In Albany, as executive dean in the Albany office, immediately I'm detailed to Stony Brook.
I see.
For 1 year.
Executive dean of what?
I was to be a troubleshooter.
I see, without portfolio.
Without portfolio. I have been dean of Bucknell University for 6 years.
I see.
Yeah, academic dean.
What's your disciplinary background?
History. European history. Harvard PhD. Under Crane Brinton. I was his second PhD. I was to be at Stony Brook for a year until they could find successor to you.
Yes. Which is a successor to Lee.
Yeah, oh, yes. A successor to... That's right.
Yes.
A successor to Lee. After you left and after Lee left, initially, Tom Hamilton thought he could run Stony Brook from Albany. We're a little late now. We're going through with the interview.
Okay.
So come back later.
Okay.
They soon, in Albany, they soon discovered that they couldn't do it.
Wasn't Harry Porter?
Yes, he was brought in. Harry had been president of Predominum.
Yes.
And was brought in to the central office as provost.
Yes.
You knew him, did you?
Not well, but I know him, yes. I had attended several meetings with the presidents of the various units of the state university system, and
right.
So I had met him among them.
Right. All right. And Harry brought me down to Planning Fields in September. September 4th is when I came.
This is of 62.
And introduced me to a faculty group. As far as I could find out, they knew very little about me, had no hand in selecting me. And I was to be the acting chief administrative officer and dean of arts and sciences.
I see.
For a year.
Acting dean of arts and sciences as well as chief administrative officer.
That's right. The acting came first.
Yes.
And in theory, I would go back to Albany.
Yes.
A week after I got there, Tom Hamilton announced that he would resign as of December 31st of 62. That left Frank Gore, who was chairman of the Board of Trustees, with the task of finding a successor to Tom Hamilton.
Yes.
That took him 18 months after December 31st. And I just simply stayed on, actually for 3 years, in that position. At the end of the first semester, I realized that we needed to have a dean. In other words, that I couldn't wear those two hats effectively.
Yes.
We needed a dean of arts
sure.
and sciences.
Sure.
So I appointed actually the chairman of the history department. I did not go outside at the time.
Who's that?
And that was Stanley Ross. He had succeeded Morse, who I never knew, but who was, I think, the chairman of the history department. You see, Morse went to Yale. And so that part was taken care of. I had dealt with Stanley Ross in his search for staff. And I found that the way he went at it was intelligent, and that he was interested in high quality, and being in the same field, I felt that I had a fairly good basis for judging what he was doing.
Sure.
So I appointed him, and he was there for a number of years before he went to Texas.
As Dean of Arts and Science.
He went to Texas, yes, as Dean of Arts and Sciences, acting to begin with, and then finally, Dean. And then, in 65, John Toll came in as president.
Yes.
And the question was, would I go back to Albany or stay with him?
Yes.
Well, I had been previously, 10 years previously, in the director's office at the Brookhaven National Laboratory on Long Island.
Oh.
We had friends on Long Island. I'd had a hand in bringing in John Toll. I went down and interviewed him for the job and briefed him when he came up to Planning Fields en route to first interview with the people in the central administration. Briefed him as to the kind of people he would find and what the difficulties were. I could have gone back to Albany and probably to another position in one of the other institutions. Sam Gould asked me whether I wanted to do that, and I was only lukewarm about it.
Sam Gould was then president of the University of Art.
Yes, but when he came in, they changed that title to chancellor.
I see.
So, apparently he talked with Johnny, John Toll, and Toll was willing and felt the need of having some continuity. So I stayed on as administrative officer in John Toll's office for a year. We see how it worked out. It worked out well. We got along well. He was an unusually fine individual.
I've met him, but only briefly.
Very energetic, friendly, open, no guile. Intent on quality and building the institution. And we got along well. I stayed until 71, until I retired in 65. And since then, I have had an office on campus in the library, and I have done a variety of things. Been on campus committees. And right now, I'm doing this oral history program for the provost.
Who is the provost?
The provost now is Jerry Schubel.
His name was on the memorandum.
I wrote that letter for him.
I see.
They had an idea. They wanted some kind of a history of the early days for the 25th anniversary. Well, people to whom that was assigned were two faculty members, and shortly one of them went to Washington, and that project never got anywhere. And I had said that I would be glad to be helpful for the years that I was Schubel came in, he asked me if I were still interested and would I, at that time, they were still thinking of having somebody write a history. And I pointed out that a lot of the people were dead. The three governors, Tom Hamilton, at that time was dead, Stanley Ross was dead.
Who was Stanley Ross?
He was the dean, I
have. Oh, yes, of course he is.
Judge Sullivan, who had succeeded Ward Melville as chairman of the local council, he was dead. And none of his papers could be found.
What about Ward Melville? Was he dead?
Ward was dead at that time, yes. Ward lived to be about 93 or something like that. 90. And I inferred from the fact that I couldn't find the Sullivan papers that we better start interviewing.
Instead, did you know George Collins?
I knew George very well at Brookhaven.
Yes.
He and I had played tennis. We've been.
Yeah, I knew him fairly well.
You did?
Yes.
Well, I've interviewed him.
Yes.
So you might like to take a quick look. I've done over 80 of these things.
I think you can cut it to you in writing.
Well, this will go quickly, I think. Name, department, rank, or position. What were you when you first came?
I was dean and acting chief administrative officer.
Right. What did they call the center then?
They called it, there was no name at first. It became State University of New York College on Long Island.
Right. Okay. And what year did you come to Stony Brook? Or come there?
1957.
57. The month was April.
I was appointed dean in February of 1957.
Right.
And came to the campus almost immediately. I was the only person there when I came. No business officer, no secretary, no nothing.
How old were you at the time?
43.
And from what institution and position did you come?
Well, I came from the central administration in Albany, where I was first assistant to the executive dean for four-year colleges and professional schools, John Slocum. And then John Slocum had a falling out, and I became assistant to President Carlson, and was thereupon asked by President Carlson to coordinate the activities regarding the establishment of a new institution on Long Island.
You know how the idea that there should be such an institution on Long Island developed.
Do I know?
Yeah. How? I'm asking you the question. How? Where did the idea come from? Whose idea was it?
I don't know. The sense that was the common opinion at the time was that with the burgeoning population of New York, and especially of downstate New York, there was increasing pressure to add at least another public institution made available to the people of downstate New York. And especially with the growing population of Long Island seemed like the reasonable place to put it. You probably know more about the political climate than I do, but the sense was at the time that the private institutions were strongly resisting any further development of the State University of New York.
Yes.
And so...
These
big ones, Columbia and
NYU and Cornell and Rochester.
Rochester.
So that the original mandate for Long Island, as you probably know, you should check this in the records, the original mandate called for an institution for the preparation of teachers in vocational schools, for teachers of vocational subjects in secondary schools, and for teachers of vocational subjects in community colleges. Obviously a very carefully restricted mandate.
Yes, mathematics and science?
No, there was no statement about mathematics and science.
Is that right?
What happened was that when President Carlson asked me to coordinate, you want me to stop?
No, it's going. I just want to make sure it's going.
When President Carlson asked me to coordinate the activities, I went around and interviewed the executive deans and everybody else that seemed to me that might be involved, and I found that for all practical purposes, nothing was going on. When Carlson asked me to do this, he said he would wake up in the middle of the night wondering what was going on and fearing that nothing was, and his fears were corroborated by what I found.
By nothing was going, nothing of what?
Nothing was going on by way of actions being taken for the establishment of an institution in Long Island, not even any planning for it, because I found that each of the executive deans assumed that somebody else was taking responsibility for it.
Each of the executive deans in the Albany office?
Yes.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, nobody was assuming responsibility for it, so no actions were being taken. So I talked with him. I reported this back to President Carlson, and he asked me to think about getting it started myself. I was not willing to commit myself right away because I wasn't quite sure what I would be committing myself to. So I went back to my office and assembled the books from the vocational schools and the community colleges and so on, and found a wide range of areas such as automotive engineering, dairy farming, horticulture.
This is Farmingdale. There was one.
Yes. Well, but there are a great number of community colleges, of course, of which Farmingdale is only one.
On Long Island?
Generally.
Generally, throughout the state.
Throughout the state. Yes. It is such a wide range.
Delhi and Carmel.
Yes. So, as I drew up this list, it was extensive and also appalling. It was the thought of being responsible for an institution providing laboratories and facilities for all of these areas did not interest me. But I also realized that any attempt to provide specialized faculty in all of these areas would be enormously expensive and would not be well received by anybody responsible for financing such a venture, and that occurred to me to afford an opportunity for doing something about it, and so I constructed a fairly extensive memo for President Carlson in which I argued that since it was impossible to deal with the specialized activities of all of these institutions, the best thing to do is to provide an institution which would give something that is basic to all of these areas, namely physics, chemistry, mathematics, and to do a reasonable job in those, one should also have good programs in the social sciences and the humanities. As I said, I put this in a memo to President Carlson, and he transmitted it to Jim Allen, who was Commissioner of Education. Shortly thereafter, we received back from Wally Nyquist, who was deputy commissioner approval of the proposal that was contained implicitly in the memo for what should be done with the institution in Long Island.
So you got your approval from the state education department.
Yes.
That met the regents too, didn't it?
Well, as far as we were
they
concerned,
can speak for the regents.
Yes.
What about the trustees of the state university? Were they consulted, or?
All I know is that they were consulted to the extent that backtracking just a minute. I don't know at what point it was decided by the Board of Trustees that this institution should open in September of 1957. This is already...
I think it's probably in the trustees' minutes.
It must be.
Yes.
But it was late in 1956 that President Carlson had asked me to coordinate the activities regarding the development of the institution on Long Island, and I found that nothing was going on, so time was running out. The only knowledge that I have of this talking with the Board of Trustees about it was the February meeting of the board, at which time he proposed my appointment as Dean and Chief Administrative Officer to get the thing going, since it was already announced that it would be in operation in the September of 1957, and this was February of 1957.
You had short notice when the short times.
Yes.
Times there. Yes. All right. Was Frank Moore chairman of the board then?
To the best of my recollection, I'm quite sure he was, yes. I didn't know Frank Moore, but yes.
Okay. Were you...
Excuse me, I'm a little cold.
Are you? All right, we can...
I don't want to lodge a little bit.
No.
I've just been recovering from my cold, so I'm sensitive now.
Where's the heat? There. I can... That's the wrong one. Turn that off, or I can give us some heat.
Either way, I...
How about a little low heat?
I think that sounds right.
All right.
Try that. Just turn this.
Question there as to what were my instructions.
Yes, right.
I suppose, stated very simply, there were none.
Fly by the seat of your pants.
That's about it.
Yeah.
The response to that memorandum, which I just told you about, having been in the affirmative, was simply assumed that I would do what would be in keeping with that memorandum, although there was no explicit discussion of that, but I assumed it, and nobody was acting to the contrary. But I was never told, in so many words, what I should do.
Yes.
On the basis of my experience in Albany, I knew that there were budgetary restrictions. I knew that I couldn't just offer whatever salaries I wanted to offer and have them approved. I knew roughly what the salary schedules would be and so on.
Well, now, just inject this. What was your background? You asked for mine. What was your background?
Well, at At the time, I was appointed assistant to the executive dean. I was an assistant professor at the University of Chicago, where I was teaching humanities, and I was assistant dean of extension, which is the
evening and adult.
Adult education division of the university.
At the undergraduate level?
Pardon?
At the undergraduate level? Or graduate?
Both. Appointments at Chicago are not at levels.
I see.
As my teaching was at the undergraduate level. The extension part of the university was not distinguished in terms of, a distinction was not made in terms of graduate and undergraduate courses. But almost all of them were undergraduate, and a great many of them were not for credit.
All right. I just gave an 8-week seminar for people over 55, and the title was Exploring American Values. That's what I happen to be interested in right now.
I see.
Now, you've mentioned President Carlson, and did you know him before you went to Albany?
No, I did not. I didn't.
How did you come to Albany?
Well, I came to Albany at the invitation of John Slocum, who was the executive dean for four-year colleges and professional schools. I think I had met John Slocum before. I came to Albany at the invitation of Reuben Froden.
Well, he was executive dean of
the executive dean of four-year colleges and professional schools before John Slocum.
Right.
He was the executive dean whom I had met, but only very briefly. He was assistant to President Hutchins at the University of Chicago before going to Albany. And I knew him very briefly, but I knew people who knew him, and apparently somebody had recommended me to him. And he called me in Chicago and asked me if I would be interested. I said I would think about it, and subsequently called him and told him that I was interested.
And your position in Albany at that time?
That was Executive Dean Reuben Froden. I moved from being his assistant to being assistant of President Carlson when there was a falling out between Reuben Froden and President Carlson. I won't try to state exactly what the issues were.
Right.
And incidentally, as you probably know, President Carlson himself subsequently fell out with the board, probably over his release of the report by the graduate dean from Minnesota.
Flagan?
Yes, in his analysis of the university, where he had called it an animal without a head, which is essentially the same finding that the Smith Committee, on which I had served some months prior to the Blagan report, in which we had reported the same thing.
The head being an individual or a central institution?
The finding of the Smith Committee was that it lacked the characteristics which would be appropriate to a university, such as PhDs in mathematics, economics, sociology, physics, chemistry, philosophy, history, and so on. It had none of those. It lacked the concern with knowledge for its own sake. It was concerned almost entirely with the practical applications in various specialized schools and training areas.
Yeah.
It was the release then of the Blagan Report, which found pretty much the same fault with the university. It was the release of that report to the public without having cleared it first with the board. It was reportedly the thing that
sparked
the departure of Carlson.
Carlson.
Yeah. And then the appointment of Tom Hamilton.
Yeah. I've gone through very quickly the material that you left with me. Tell me a little bit more about the reasons for the Smith report, the appointment of the Smith Commission.
It was a committee. I'm not sure whether it was appointed by the board or by the president. I was asked by the president to serve on the committee, but that doesn't necessarily mean. It was a committee to examine the state of the university.
I see.
And
remember the date of it? Offhand? 55, 56.
Well, I didn't arrive at. A lot happened in a relatively short time. I didn't arrive at Albany as Reuben Froden's assistant until December of 1955. And so this committee must have been appointed early in 1956. I don't know how all this gets in. I would have to have access to the files.
Sure.
To get the date straight.
All right. Well,
but I didn't arrive there until December of 1955. And it wasn't immediately that I was asked to serve on the Smith Committee, although I hadn't been very long before I was asked to serve on that committee to study the university.
Who else was on it? Do you remember anybody?
Mort Grant, who is director of the Research Foundation I forget the publisher of the Albany newspaper. I don't remember.
Knickerbocker Press?
I'm not sure. Whatever the newspaper was at that time, or the prominent newspaper. A couple of faculty members from the State University system, and of course Smith, who was president of one of the teachers' colleges.
One of the teachers' colleges.
I would love it.
I'll cite them for you.
All right.
Oneata, Rockport, Cortland.
Cortland. He was president of Cortland.
Cortland. Mm-hmm. I taught at Geneseo a long time.
Oh, I see. Well, that committee assembled materials from all of the institutions within the system. It was an enormous amount of material, and after numerous meetings and discussions of this vast amount of material, I was asked by Smith to write the report. I simply used principles of organization, which I commonly use, organizing materials of that kind, and was able to ascend them in intelligible units. And so I wrote the initial draft of the report, and it was added to and altered, of course, in committee discussions. But as I said, the findings of that investigation were pretty much like the findings of the Blagan investigation. I had some fairly extensive discussions with Blagan, so it was not a surprise that we pretty much agreed on what the big fault was with the State University of New York.
was an idea that the university, State University of New York, should copy the other land-grant institutions and have one central institution, which normally would have been Cornell if it hadn't have been a private institution, centrally located.
Yes.
And that was given up fairly quickly, as I understand it, with the idea that the public institutions should supplement the existing private institutions and be located where there were gaps in the available higher education institutions. Is that a fair statement?
I wouldn't be a competent judge. Well, there's a book, as you probably know, New York Establishes a State University. I forget who the author was.
Well, there are two books that I know of. One is by Oliver Carmichael, who I think was chairman of the Board of Trustees.
I don't think that's the one I'm thinking of.
Well, then there's another one by Frank Abbott, who...
I'm quite sure the one I'm thinking of is that the title was New York Establishes a State University.
All right, I'll look it up. At any rate, all right, I think that cites pretty well where you came from.
I guess so.
All right.
I suppose then it is not surprising to respond to another one of your questions. How did I recruit faculty?
Right.
Since my appointment in Chicago had been in humanities, I, of course, was most familiar with people in humanities, and I had great respect for Harold Ziskind, and he was one of the first I turned to, and I knew Merrill Roden pretty well, and he was an excellent teacher I knew, and then I got in touch with, I knew that I should not concentrate solely on one university, of course, in finding new faculty.
But those were the people you knew best.
Those were the people I knew best. And I turned and I got in touch with Justice Butler at Columbia in order to get in touch with some possible candidates at Columbia. And I got in touch with a professor of philosophy at Yale.
Brian Blanchard?
No. I don't know why I'm having trouble with names this morning. I guess it's my cold.
Marvelous.
He wrote a book on Plato's mathematics.
I know.
Robert Brumbaugh. Anyway, I got in touch with him regarding possible candidates at Yale, and he gave me some names at Yale, and these led to other contacts, and eventually I got in touch with Richard Mould and
yes.
Bill Lister.
I tried to get him to come to Bucknell.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah.
Lots of people wrote to me telling me both how good they would be and about the wonderful people they knew. I think the most notable example of this was when the dean of the Teachers College at Columbia University called me and told me and recommended an appointment for a professor of physics. I interviewed the one that she recommended, and my judgment of him was that he might be a good teacher of physics in high school, but nothing beyond. And when I refused to appoint him, the dean of Columbia Teachers College called me and said, "Do you think your judgment is better than mine?" woman. I don't remember her name, but I'm not. My response was only that I was responsible for the appointment and she wasn't. But anyway, I was getting lots of recommendations from all over the place. One amusing one was from Buffalo, where the person pleaded with me because he couldn't stand another winter of shoveling snow.
Well, that's a good reason to come to Long Island.
Yes.
All right. Let's see. What do you know about the Heald report?
I don't know anything about the Heald report.
You don't?
The name rings a bell, but I do not. If I ever knew anything about it, I've forgotten.
Well, the governor when you came was Harriman.
Yes. Yes, that reminds me of an amazing incident.
Let's have it.
This was before the institution had opened on Long Island, or very shortly thereafter. Governor Harriman apparently had written a comment regarding a television show sponsored by Encyclopedia Britannica, which was a quiz show, in which he had pointed out an error in, I forget, I never did really know exactly what it was all about, but that he had pointed out an error in the judgment regarding the answer to a question on that show. And in token of their appreciation, Encyclopedia Britannica presented him with a copy of the Encyclopedia Britannica, whereupon he or his public relations officer called me on Long Island and said that the governor would like to give this as a present to the new university or the new college on Long Island. So would I please come up to Albany and receive this as a gift from the governor? So I went in and the governor's formal ceremonial office with lots of people around and the Encyclopedia Britannica was sitting on the desk before the two of us, and so we both came up to the desk before all the people and the cameras and whatnot, and we both stood there, and Governor Harriman turned and looked at me and said, "Well, aren't you going to say anything?" And that put me on the spot because I didn't really know what the circumstances had been because of which he had been given this encyclopedia. But I gave out with some whatever could occur to me regarding his interest in education and his interest in the accuracy of information and so on. And he said, "Well, but I think you should tell me say a little bit more just exactly what the circumstances were." And I hesitated, and so he went on to give them himself. And, well, then the formal presentation that he reached for them and he handed them to me. Then he wanted to take them back again, and it became apparent to me that he thought that I was a representative of Encyclopedia Britannica instead of the dean from the College of Long Island. So when he and I had a kind of tug of war, finally he realized what was going on and he said, "Well, how are things on Long Island?" I have a picture of the two of us, each of us thinking that the other is,
I say.
Okay. Well, anyway, yes, Governor Harriman was, he was governor at that time, and while I was on Long Island, the ground was broken at Stony Brook for the new campus, and at that time, Nelson Rockefeller was governor, so he was the one that came down for the groundbreaking ceremony.
Do you remember the gist of what he said?
Of what Harriman or
what Rockefeller said?
No.
All right. That speech is not in the papers, in the governor's papers. I would be interested to find it.
The as I recall, it was very brief, so that it was, I suspect that it was, it didn't have much of the way of detail.
Did you know Mr. Coe by any chance?
Which Coe are you speaking
William
of?
Robertson.
Pardon?
In other words, the person who had given planting fields to initially to Farmingdale.
Well, that Coe was dead.
Yes, I see. All right.
Bill Coe,
Bill Coe was his son.
I do. Bill Coe was on the council of the college on Long Island, along with George Collins and so on. But he was not. He was not active in any way.
What was your impression of the quality of people on the council and the degree of their interest in what was going on? Except for George, of course. Except for George Collins.
Except for George Collins. Well, Ward Melville was actively interested, although I had very little discussion with him outside council meetings. I regularly presented the council with detailed statements about what the activities were at the college at that time. There was always discussion of those reports, but there was never, that I can recall, any attempt on the part of any of them to take any active part in